This podcast was created by the Arts and Junior Cycle team for the Junior Cycle Talks channel.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Junior Cycle Talks. I'm Mary Lowry and I'm an advisor with the Arts and Junior Cycle team. In this episode, I speak to Belfast-based composer and music facilitator Elaine Agnew. I began our conversation by asking Elaine to tell us a little bit about her job.
Well, I think I have the best job in the world as a composer. I get paid to write music, and definitely a growing part of my career over the past number of years is then working as a facilitator, where I take my skills and knowledge of music into either healthcare, education or community settings, and then work with people in those situations, and I encourage and help them to create music and to make music. So I'm juggling either being on my own at home, finishing off commission or starting something new. And then that's very much balanced up with then working out in various community settings with all that great energy. And that's what I really love as well.
What is it about the amateur musician or the person who thinks that they can't sing or can't play an instrument and bringing an experience to them and engaging them in a workshop?
Just that music should be fun. So you try and get them to expel all that great energy they have and then somehow home that in or control it somehow. But I just love that chaos, and you're handing out instruments and somebody will start banging the drum, and I can see teachers walking down the corridor just looking in the room going, what is going on in there? But from all that kind of chaos, it shows that the children just love making noise. And basically music is noise, but it's organized. So you organize it in a way. You might have them sitting in a certain order and they play their instrument one after each other, or maybe they all play together but they only play once, as if they're striking 1 o'clock. So you come along, and with all that chaotic energy and that mess that's happening in the room, you then put a shape on it and you can just carve it into something really beautiful. Especially young people, I think they like structure and they like order, but I think it's very important that making music should be fun.
And I think playfulness is at the heart of creativity.
Oh, totally. It's good that playfulness is there maybe at the start, and then you control it somehow, but then you go back to it at a time when they don't think that they're going to be allowed to be as chaotic or whatever again. So it's all about not control, but it's about respect and harnessing all that amazing energy and that amazing creativity that they have, that they don't know that they have it, till you turn around and say, well, I see you three, if you see that thing you were doing there in the corner? Sure, come up to the front, just do it in front of everybody else. And then you say to the rest of the class, could you go and join them with your instrument and somehow add something to it? And then suddenly you take something that was originally maybe playful or a little bit chaotic, and then you can just make it into something. So I think you just give them a few ideas and then you step back and then they just take over.
And there's that moment when you've harnessed that playfulness, there's almost like a penny drop moment where they think, wow, actually I've created something here that maybe encourages them to take it a little bit more seriously, or to take themselves maybe a little bit more seriously.
Oh yeah, and it's probably involved me as a facilitator saying very few words, and I might have a gesture that just means everybody stop, and then we might have silence for a few seconds, and I might go 5, 6, 7, 8, and then I might suddenly clap. And then they'll all look at me and I might freeze, and they know, oh, right, we must all freeze. And I'll go 5, 6, 7, 8. And then you start to make up things. But it's very much being there on the spot, reading them as a grip and saying, oh, this would work. So I think they love things that are really loud and chaotic. And then everybody freeze. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And then back into it. And then maybe next time you only freeze for 6 seconds. And then you only freeze for 4. So they know that the next time I'm going to freeze, that it's only for 2 seconds. So they're listening, they're understanding what's going on. So they could actually write it themselves. So I love the fact as well that I use very few words. There's no leader, there's no conductor, there's no teacher that's right, you do this, you do that. Mm-hmm. They're just listening or following me, or I'm just doing a few gestures, or I'm freezing or not moving in the room. Or I might put my hands in the air and then just bring them very slowly down, just to see what do they do when I do this. And maybe I start to crouch down, so they might start crouching down with me, but then they'll realise, oh, I think maybe we'll start to play a little bit quiet. Okay. And then quieter, and then you do the opposite and they get loud. There's so much in music you can do through gesture, through dance, through movement. So it's having very little verbal communication with them at certain times and just letting it all come from them and then taking all that energy and making sense of it.
I'm going to move away from talking about facilitation for a moment. If you can talk a little bit about your career as a composer.
Yeah, I've composed for lots and lots of different music ensembles over the years, from solo piano or solo violin right up to full orchestra with choir. I've also created an opera earlier this year. Maybe in more recent years, I've been doing a lot of choral music. And I love working with poets who will work with you to create text for you to say it, as opposed to going to a book of poetry that already exists. Mm-hmm. So I love that collaborative element of working with choirs. And then a lot of choirs I work with would tend to be more on a very good amateur basis. So there'll be maybe a longer rehearsal process, or you might be much more involved with them, as opposed to when you work with a professional group, you're working with a conductor who will take your music and then rehearse it with the group. So you have maybe less interaction with the performance group. I really love working with choirs, taking the written word and setting it to music. I love string orchestras. I think it's just that similarity to your own voice. I love the energy then that an orchestra has. So the RTE National Symphony Orchestra is just a massive orchestra with up to maybe 100 players. And they've got maybe 4 or 5 percussionists. So they make the most amazing sound. So whenever you're given that palette to work with, I suppose it's like an artist, you're just given every colour underneath the sun. Mm. Or you can make every colour underneath the sun from different colour combinations. And then I love working then with the school groups. So yeah, big scores, wee scores, scores of only 2 pages, scores of 200 or 300 pages, which can be a bit scary at times.
And one of the pieces that you have selected to share with us today is called Strings Astray, which you composed in 1994. How did you approach composing that?
So I had just graduated from my postgraduate composition year in the Royal Scottish Conservatoire of Music and Drama in Glasgow. And then I got a call from the Irish Chamber Orchestra. I was still living in Glasgow at the time. And I had never been commissioned professionally before. And they approached me about writing them a new piece. They would be touring around Ireland and they would be premiering it at the 2 Cathedrals Festival that was held in Derry. And I suppose I'm thinking, why me? Like, why me? You know, how do you even know who I am? But I have no idea how that all happened. But they said, we're a full string orchestra. We'll probably on the night be maybe 18, 20 players. We'd like your piece to be about 10 minutes. A really important thing that you need to know is that there is no conductor. It'll be led by the principal first violinist, who at that time is the brilliant Fionnuala Hunt. So I'm thinking, well, how do you write a piece for an orchestra with all of those players, yet there's no conductor? But yet Fionnuala has to do that from her seat. And they said, oh, the other thing is they don't sit down. They always stand up when they play. I thought, oh, isn't that fabulous? Especially string players, because it's so animated. So then I was thinking, can I make their gestures part of the piece so that it's as visual as it is a sound experience? The fact that the orchestra all stand and play, you have possibilities of amazing gestures. And at that time, I suppose I was just out of university and mad keen during the summer to go off and do composer courses. They used to be maybe 2 every summer in Poland. And I remember doing those for a number of years. And at those composers courses, I met amazing people. I met this man called Mr. Mani, a tabla player from Bangalore in South India. And he did a lot of rhythm workshops with us where you take like a regular beat, but you can make it irregular. So it's as if the music always hiccups. So if you're dancing, there's always a little bit of like a trip in it. So we did a lot of work like that with him. And then I thought, for this piece, why don't I think of it as just a series of short dances and I'll somehow fuse them all together? I thought it would be easier to think of this piece as 4 little pieces that all string together, as opposed to one big long piece that's 10 minutes long, which was just such a scary thought. So I set off then and I thought, right, I love a mazurka, because I've been in Poland and we did loads of dancing out in the local town square at nighttime. And so a mazurka is like a waltz, but a much livelier waltz in 3 time. what Mr. Manny said about regular music. He said the accent doesn't always have to be where you think it is. You can put the accent in other places, so you can always make the music feel as if it's tripping or hiccuping. And at that time as well, I was playing a bourée, which would be like a fairly fast dance in four time by Bach. So I had all these things in my head, and I sat down with my manuscript paper and my pencils and rubbers, and then off I went and think, right, what kind of compositional processes? Because you're starting with a palette where everything is possible. So I knew I was writing for the Irish Chamber Orchestra, who are brilliant players. And I knew, yes, they would have a part. And I knew, yes, they would be standing when they're playing. And I thought, right, now, how am I going to take the first step? So, right, I'll think about maybe the little Bach piece that I'm doing at the moment and do a little bourée. And I still do it to this day. I take the seven white notes, A, B, C, D, E, F, and G, and then the five black notes. And I write them all in wee bits of paper and I throw them into a hat, and then I pull some of them out, and as a starting point I'll just use those pitches, and I happen to pull out an A, D, E and an F, and I started fiddling around with that and coming up with ideas on my piano and then writing it down. And then next thing I would reach and put the Bach piece and play a little bit of this Bach's bourée D minor, and then realise, gosh, I could have a little hint of Bach in this. So whenever all the double basses and cellos are doing that really or whatever it is on those pitches, just throw in a little bit of Bach on the top of it. So that's how that came about. And then I took that idea of just restricting the number of pitches and thinking to myself, well, I'll think about this Mr. Manny piece, so I'll write something in an irregular time signature. So for the first maybe minute of the piece, everybody just plays the note E, but it's all the different rhythmical combinations of that E. So the first and second violins, the viola, cello and double bass, everybody's playing an E at different octaves, but they're all doing it in different rhythms with different accents being thrown here. So it's digga, 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 digga. And the accent keeps shifting and changing, and the music keeps changing all the time, and then it kind of screeches to a halt. And then I needed something slow just to give the listener and to give me and the players just a moment to breathe. And then I come up with this idea of a sway. I just love that idea of swaying. And then as the musicians are playing the swaying, that it's just lovely straight arms, and maybe they're slightly leaning back as they play. So the gesture of them playing the music of those individual dances then had quite an important element as to what I put on the paper. But the cellists and obviously the double bass would sit and play. So the viola players and the violinists, then you could have lots of scale-like things in their right arm with the bow, would be like working really hard, or else you just have a big long note and they just, everything's very still. So I wanted that to be part of the piece. So you come up with ideas and you put it on paper. And this is before music programmes like Sibelius and things existed. So I was writing it on my manuscript paper and then trying to play it on the piano. But, you know, knitting it all together, and it all made sense, and I was happy with it and gave it to the orchestra, and they played it and they loved it, and they've played it loads all around the world since. And it was played, I think, last year, the David Brophy conducted the National Symphony Orchestra playing it. Fionnuala Hunt led the orchestra, so that was a kind of full circle from 1994. So yeah, they did it in the National Concert Hall last year. So it's one of those pieces that I'm really proud of. It was my first ever professional commission. It's all handwritten. You know, nowadays you can do things into computers and music programs, and then it plays it back, so you know if you've got any wrong notes. And I had loads of wrong notes and I missed loads of things, but that's why we have rehearsals to work all those things out. So I really like Strings of Stray because I think it's got lots of characteristics of me in it. Those things that make you distinctive from other composers, those things that's really important for you to develop through your teenage years, your own voice. So I think Strings of Stray is just so me.
Thank you.
And how does it feel to watch it and listen to it being performed as an audience member when the orchestra performs it?
Oh, it is such a thrill, especially when you write something that you really like. And I mean that from the composition point of view, not so much the performance. So yeah, to sit in the audience and to have these amazing musicians play your music, that's the biggest thrill ever.
Wow. You spoke about the process of writing that piece of music. You must get stuck though. What do you do to try and help yourself across those problems?
Well, I think the best thing about a commission is you have a deadline, and that deadline is normally in relation to a rehearsal period. So you have a concert, you'll have a premiere date, you'll have a rehearsal schedule prior to that. And I find deadlines are crucial, because what I'll do is, even though that deadline is a year or 2 years or 6 months, I always leave it to the last minute. So I work from home. The house has to be really neat and tidy and nothing out of place. I suppose in a way I'm decluttering my own head. And then I'll start just with an empty manuscript paper. And then more than likely it's this fear of that approaching deadline that really kicks in with ideas. And I'll scribble a lot if I'm on a train or going somewhere. And I think actually just writing out music is quite therapeutic. I'm not writing it out thinking that's a piece of music that could become something. I'm just doodling. But quite often I'll keep all these doodles and then I'll maybe sit at the piano and play a bit. Most of it will be rubbish. But there might be that, oh, that's quite nice, that wee. That. But I find if I'm just not in the mood to write, just forget it. For years and years, I suppose I really worked against it. Whereas nowadays, I suppose I'm older and I have better control of my time. And you always get it done. But they say the deadline's 5 o'clock on Monday. They'll get it about 2 minutes to 5. But it's definitely, the deadline is the thing that I really focus on. So it's just about getting those moments of silence. And I know, right, for the next 3 hours, I can actually just write. And I'll take the phone off the hook and turn my mobile off. And then I've got no excuses.
Mm. It's really interesting because there are two separate facets to your work. And one facet is where you are listening to external voices, external circumstances, when you're working with communities and groups. And then there's the other facet of your work where you really have to power off and listen to the internal and to give yourself the space to listen to that voice.
Yeah. And they couldn't be any more extreme. Mm. But I think that's what gets me going. I need the silence and the quiet. I'll quite often take myself off to the beautiful Tyrone Guthrie Centre, the artist retreat in County Monaghan. If I'm there for a week, you have total silence for a week. And so that's a really beautiful place to work. But then I crave then the other side of it, where you're in a space with 20, 30, 100 people and you're collectively making noise, making music together.
What are you working on at the moment?
So at the moment, I've got a major choral commission from the Belfast Philharmonic Society. They have an adult choir and then they have various youth choirs, chamber choirs. For their 150th anniversary, they've commissioned me to write a piece for mass choirs, where a lot of the choirs will all come together, maybe a 10, 12 minute piece. So whenever we were initially talking about it, what the words would be, they said, is there something that already exists that you'd like to say it? And I said, well, actually, if there was funding, could we work with a poet as part of this, make it more collaborative? So I'm really delighted that we're working with the Belfast poet Sinead Morrissey. She's going to write a text specifically for this commission that I'll set to music. So she'll write something that'll be maybe 80% complete. And then the two of us, as I'm composing it, then we'll fiddle around and edit things and swap things around until we get to that final stage. I love the collaborative element. I'm writing a solo piano piece for the Wall City Music International Piano Festival. So that's held in Derry every year. This year, as part of the International Piano Competition, myself and Ed Bennett have been commissioned to write little pieces that will be a set piece that all the pianists will have to play as part of the competition. At the moment it's called St. Francis, but it's influenced by Seamus Heaney's poem St. Francis and the Birds. And then another thing that I'm just dipping my toe in very gently at the moment is the soundtrack for a video game. Now, this really scares me, I have to say. It's a commission for Music for Galway. So I've been asked to write the soundtrack for a video game, which is called Path Out. So the video game already exists, but the game development company, who are based in Vienna, are rethinking the game, and they would like me to write a more orchestral score. So I'm working with Piano Biennale, a Dutch music ensemble, on the project. So we've only started conversations about it. So I haven't a clue how it works. I've never played a video game. I don't even know what that entails. So he was saying that actually all holds you in really good stead for this. So we'll be developing that for a project called Songs of Travel that will be part of Music for Galway in 2024.
That sounds really exciting.
Yeah. Terrifying, yeah. But yeah, exciting.
And I assume you'll have to engage in some way with the video game to understand the parameters or not?
Yes. From now until, I think, the summer, they're going to develop the game. And I'm part of that process, the reimagining of the game that already exists. And then I've got until October to finalise the music. So as far as I know, I have to write 12 little short pieces because there's 12 chapters in this game, and that the pieces don't really have a beginning or an end, because when you're playing the video game, you might complete this task in 20 seconds and then you go on to the next level, which would be a different piece of music for a different game. So that's the only thing I know, is that it goes round in a circle, each of these 12 little pieces. But for the Songs of Travel Festival in Galway in 2024, it'll be played in a standard concert format. Mm. So it'll exist as the soundtrack for the video game, but it will also exist as a piece then that can be performed by this Dutch-based music ensemble.
And finally, you have chosen second piece of music to share with us today, which is called Remarkable. Can you give us a little bit of the context for that piece?
I, over the years, have worked with an organisation called ArtsCare, and they promote artists working in various healthcare situations, either in hospitals or in daycare centres. And I've been doing that, I think, since 1992. But there in 2022, they celebrated their 30th anniversary. And obviously that was in the middle of the pandemic. And so ArtsCare came to me with the Austro Orchestra and said, we would like to commission you to write a piece called Remarkable. So that's the first time I've been commissioned to write a piece, and they've given me the title of the piece, which I really liked. And we would like the piece to really honour and thank all the remarkable work that healthcare staff and artists have been doing throughout the whole of the pandemic, and that the project would involve the Austro Orchestra and a choir, a full soprano, alto, tenor, bass choir, but also a single line that could be sung by any amateur group, whether it was a healthcare choir or a children's choir, an easy enough single line that is also embedded in the big choir parts. ArtsCare, during the whole of pandemic, had been asking patients and clients to write about their experience of the healthcare environment during the pandemic. And we had pages and pages of testimonials from people within the healthcare setting. And we gave them all to this guy called John Toll, who studied music with me. He's a music presenter on BBC Radio Ulster and BBC Radio 3. And we gave John the task of taking all of these testimonies and all of these words. And the words then that John created from all of their words is incredibly beautiful. And so the Remarkable exists. And it's just a really beautiful piece. And to think that something as negative and as horrible as COVID-19 and the pandemic that hit us all so suddenly in 2020, that something as beautiful as all of these words and this performance came out of that. You know, there's no way Remarkable ever would have existed if it hadn't been for that. So I suppose that's how we try and think of it. It was the CEO of ArtsCare at that time, Dr. Jenny Elliott, that came up with the whole theme and the whole project and the title. So that was the first thing. She says, could you write something that's remarkable? And I could give it a go. And I said, what it's about? And she said, it's going to be about how remarkable people are. And people really are remarkable.
Yeah.
wonderful way to end.
Absolutely.
So thank you very much, Elaine. It's been a real pleasure to chat to you and have the opportunity to listen to you today.
Thanks, Mary.
Thank you for listening to this podcast, which was created by the Arts and Junior Cycle team for Junior Cycle Talks podcast channel. To hear more from Junior Cycle Talks, search for us on SoundCloud or anywhere you listen to your podcasts.